I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
And John, when I was younger and still in high school, I used to hang out with a bunch of guys, and one of them, his dad was a contractor. And what I noticed was throughout the 4 years of high school, their house was always under construction. Something in their house was being redone. And it was interesting to me because the first time I ever went over there, the living room was being redone. And over the course of the 4 years, other rooms throughout the house were being redone. And then in our senior year, his parents started redoing the living room again. And I bring that up because I have now, like, cleaned out and redone, quote unquote, my basement 5 times since I've moved in here. Now, I still have my little office space where I do my podcast recording. It's a little room off the main part of the basement. But the main part of the basement now, I have a gaming table set up, and I'm setting up a gaming area, a game room, we'll say. But not like your Brady Bunch game room with a ping pong table and, you know, darts. This is a table for role-playing games and board games, that the kinds of stuff that I like to do.
I saw that you posted that on Facebook. It looks pretty cool.
It's a really nice table. I'm very impressed with it. It took forever for it to get here. I had ordered it about a year ago, and at the time I had a game group. They were coming every Friday. We were sitting in my kitchen at my kitchen table playing, and as any of the members of that group can tell you, that's not a really big space. And the table itself takes up a lot of room. And I just thought at the time, I need to do something different. And I had seen some really cool gaming tables at Denver Comic Con, which, by the way, is no longer Denver Comic Con. Now it's the Pop Culture Con, because they don't want to get sued by San Diego Comic Con.
Oh, wow.
And I'd seen some tables there, but they were $15,000.
Wow.
Which is just crazy. Every single one of them was handcrafted, all this kind of stuff. You know, we build. I remember at the time they had really nice tables out there, and then they had all these signs up to say we hand make, you know, hand build every single table. And so that gets them really, really expensive. So I knew that was not anywhere near the neighborhood of my price range. So that was not an option for me. So I went online and I looked around a little bit, and I ended up on the Table of Ultimate Gaming. And they had done a Kickstarter, they had done some other stuff, and they had figured out how to sort of mass produce a really nice looking table. And that's what I ended up going with. And I remember ordering it, and it said, you know, pre-order now and for a June 2018 delivery. And that June 2018 delivery ended up being, you know, a November 2018 delivery. So they were back ordered. And so first you have to wait months and months and months and months. And then as your date's approaching, then you have to wait months and months and months more, which kind of sucked. And then it came in multiple boxes that were about 5 billion pounds a peach each. I was going to say a piece and then each. And then I put them together and said peach.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were just huge, heavy. And then it's one of those little, I mean, it made IKEA look like Legos.
Wow.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to put it together then in the end?
Well, it says 3 hours. Like one person could put this table together in 3 hours. I'm assuming they're talking about Barry Allen. Because it ended up taking me probably 48 hours, like 2 good solid days. I worked on it on a Saturday or a Sunday, and got most of it together. But then I also found out that, like, pieces were missing. A box got delivered to a neighbor. And the neighbor, instead of just like coming over and telling me, hey, we got this box with your name on it, apparently called UPS and had UPS come and get it. Because again, it was freaking heavy.
Yeah.
So UPS comes and gets it and goes, oh, shit, you know, that's like two doors down. And then they just brought it back over here. So once I got that, I was able to spend another Sunday working on it and finally finished it and got it all together. So
cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. You know, I wanted to ask you, I was thinking about this before we got started today, something I did yesterday, which I haven't done in a really long time. At this point in your life, you know, we talk about getting books from the publishers and what we do with them. What is your relationship with physical books at this point? I feel like the last time we spoke about this, you were saying how you like having your kind of special editions, and you kind of treat them as almost as art, as an object that you value and that you like to have on your shelf. Obviously you like reading the books too, but that's something you think about a lot. And as people know, I read mostly ebook and a lot of audiobook, but I still do physical books from time to time too. And I've had some recent experiences with physical books that I want to talk about with you, but I know most of your reading these days is done via audiobook, but other than books that you've previously owned, like what's your kind of relationship with physical books these days?
I don't know that I understand the question. Like, I love physical books. I have tons of physical books.
Do you go out and buy physical books?
No.
When's the last time, not getting one sent to you, but that you were like, I really want that book and I think I would enjoy it most as a physical book? When's the last time you went and purchased a book either through a bookstore or through Amazon?
Does the Mile High Con count when I bought the Lord of the Rings editions?
Let's not count that. Let's say that you had an experience where you're just like, yeah, I want to get this. Cause like those books you already read and you wanted that particular book.
It was probably Briefcases. I had intended to go out and buy it. Mm-hmm. And then the publisher sent it to me.
Right.
Before that, it was probably, Gail Carriger's books, the Prudence books. Cause I tend to go out and buy hers physically.
Right. I'm thinking about this a lot because yesterday, I went and got, service on my car, just like the normal, like, you know, 5,000 mile service. And I was there for a couple hours while that was getting done. And as I was leaving, I thought, oh, you know what? There's this old used bookstore right here. And I had actually sold books to them before and donated books to them before, but I never actually looked around and bought books there because I'm always trying to get rid of physical books. Like, that going and purchasing physical books is not something I think about too often, or haven't in the past. But now that I take notes on all my books, that attitude has changed. So I went in there and I looked around, and I didn't spend too long in there, maybe a half hour or so, just kind of looking, and ended up buying two books because everything in there is in good shape. And one was a Stoicism book. Obviously, I'm into that now. And I had that saved as an ebook ready to go, which I didn't purchase yet. And the ebook was $10, and the exact same version of this book I bought for $3. And then I bought another book for like $3 too. And I did, because I read a different Stoicism book recently, and I read it as a physical book. And the reason why I went with the physical version of that book is because I'd purchased the ebook. You got to watch with ebooks. And I don't know if we've talked about this before. If it's a new ebook, I don't think you have much to worry about. If it's like a recently written new ebook, you'll be fine. When you're talking about Stoicism or any kind of public domain kinds of things, there are many versions, many ebook versions of these books. And you'll often be thinking like, well, which one am I supposed to get? And a lot of times if you go with the least expensive one, you may get yourself into trouble. And I did with this particular book. It's the Discourses by Epictetus, who's a Roman philosopher. And the book came highly recommended. I started reading it as an ebook. I was reading it for a couple of days and I was like, I don't understand this at all. And I realized that I think it was either a poor translation or just someone ran the original text through some sort of translator, and because it just was, didn't make any sense. So I ended up buying the physical version of that book because I thought, you know what, if it's a physical version, chances are it was edited better than these ebooks. But in the process of reading that book a couple weeks ago, I really liked having a nonfiction book like that where I had like my highlighter and was getting into it. And I found myself reading it more than I expected. And so that's why I wanted to go in to the used bookstore to see if there's anything else that I'd be interested in, because I liked that experience so much. So I'm sort of, I'm not abandoning ebooks, but I there's a room in my heart for physical books again, is what I'm saying. And I'm sort of curious about other people out there, what their feelings about and what your feelings about it. Because I know you don't even really read ebooks. It's pretty much, you're pretty much all audiobook at the as we currently speak.
It depends on what it is, but yeah, and just because it's easier for me, you know, when I'm in the car. So my sort of evolution with paper in physical media, I used to go to the bookstore and looking for something to read, and that was where all of my disposable cash went. So, and it started, and I think I've told this story before, when I moved to Tennessee. And I had moved there for a job, and I was very, very isolated. Even to the point where one of the precepts of the job was, don't become friendly with your customers. I wasn't a salesperson. I was a bonded warehouse auditor. So it was basically my job to go through your inventory and see if you had lied at any point and hidden sales in order to keep yourself from having to pay a bill. That's like the most bare bones way of explaining that job. So it, you know, the precept of don't become friendly with these folks was basically so that when the time came, and it did come, where I had to say, look, you know, you hid $15,000 in sales, you have to write me a check right now. There was no hesitation. Right? So, or if I had to seize their warehouse, which was a completely other story. So it was very isolating, and I had gotten back into reading. And so I would go to the bookstore and I would buy, you know, 6, 7, 8 paperback books. I would just buy tons of books and consume them like crazy. And at the time, I found things like, you know, Robert Jordan and Modisset and Kate Elliott. And I started noticing the logos on the sides of the books, and that's, you know, I started buying books based on the publisher, not necessarily the author. And a lot of what I bought was Tor. And that was kind of how I just decided, you know, I would read a Tor book and say, hey, this was really, really well done. And when I would go back, I would look for more books published by Tor.
Right.
And so that's how I did my fiction kind of reading at the time. And I don't really think you can do that anymore. I can't remember the last time I purchased a Tor book. And it's got nothing to do with Tor, really. It's just, that's not my measuring stick anymore. It's necessarily the publisher. You know, now I'm more invested in the authors, and the publisher doesn't necessarily matter to me.
I think I don't think it's a bad or a good thing. I think even in the time span that we've done this show, I think you've seen a bit of a shift in publishers. I feel like within genre, certain publishers had kind of an identity, the types of books they might publish. And maybe Tor for a time was a lot of the high fantasy.
Yeah.
And what have you. And, you know, they still did science fiction and everything too. But there was a certain identity. You know, I feel like Orbit had a certain identity for a
sure.
while.
And
I feel,
you know, like Bane was considered, and probably still is considered, military sci-fi.
Right.
And, you know, Ace and Ace Rock does a lot of urban fantasy, you know, so on and so forth.
Yeah, and Pyre, I felt, had a certain identity when Lou was there and doing their thing. And whereas now, I feel like they all kind of, the ones that are still around, publish pretty widely, which that's in terms of the types of genres that they publish and the types of authors and the types of, I feel like Tor has all sorts of stuff. You know, they still have some high fantasy, but it's a lot of science fiction and it's a lot of weird fiction and, you know, all kinds of different things that I feel like Tor doesn't necessarily have that identity anymore. So I don't know how much brand loyalty there is. Maybe there is. Maybe there are people out there that still just go and buy every Tor book or go and buy every Orbit book. But I feel like it's much more spread out, which is probably better for, because that means they're publishing different kinds of things. You know, they're probably, you're probably not getting the, oh, this isn't a Tor book. You know, if you're someone that's pitching your, you know, an agent pitching a book to Tor, you know, maybe they pitch all sorts of stuff now because they realize like, oh, it doesn't have to be like a Robert Jordan kind of thing. It could be anything, just as long as it's good. I think my feelings about physical books were negatively influenced by my situation because of receiving so many books, which is great. We've talked about it many, many times, but it was a chore to do something with those books that I really used to not like getting so many. And now that when I moved, I didn't carry over and get as many books anymore. So I still get some, but not nearly as many, which is kind of good. So now I find myself having a different relationship with physical books, where if it's something I want to go out and buy, particularly if it's nonfiction, I kind of like it. I don't know. It's weird. I think the mix is really what's important. I think I like having a physical book going and an ebook going and an audio book going. And because depending on the situation that you're in, I always want to have something to read, and I may not want to read it on my Kindle or my phone. The type of situation might be where it's nicer to have a regular good old physical book. That being said, I've talked a lot about my note-taking, and I wanted to mention this, and perhaps I will do this as a pick going forward, but I've been using this service for exactly 1 month now, because my free trial of it is about to end, and I'm totally going to pay for it. Have you heard of this, I don't know if you want to call it a website, I guess we'll call it a website for now, but a web application maybe would be more accurate. It's called Readwise, Readwise, and it's .io. Have you heard of this before?
No.
And I have not mentioned it to you before. It's, I will say this, this is a really niche service. It's a really niche service, and it's basically made for me. They made this for me. What it does, if you have a large library of books that you've read on Amazon, and you've read on your Kindle, I should say, ebooks that you've read on your Kindle, and if you've done a lot of highlighting and note taking within your Kindle, within your Kindle app, what this does, you hook up your Amazon account, your Kindle account, with this service, and it scrapes all of your highlights. Now, if you haven't done a lot of highlights on your Kindle books, then this service is not for you. I have done, I think it says as of now, I have 8,000 something highlights from the various books that I've read over the years. And what it does then, you can look at it in any way you want, but it will then send you an email, or you could just go to it, and every day you can have it as a set number, and it'll, and I have mine set to 15. It sends me 15 highlights every day randomly from the books that I've read. And as you read them and go over them, you can favorite them, you can tag them with a category. So that analog system that I've been using with my index cards, as I've talked about before, this is sort of a digital version of that. I am not giving up my analog version. I think that's too valuable. But this is a nice supplement to that, where it gets you to review the things that you've read. It's like, why did I take this highlight on this book that I read 3 years ago? What is it about this? So by then kind of favoriting it and tagging it and putting them in different categories, it's a way to access the knowledge and the books that you've already read. And I love it. And I believe, so I'm, like I said, I'm just about done with the free trial. And I believe going forward, it's like $3 a month or something like that. For me, this is totally worth it. I realize this is probably useless for most people. But if you are one who does a lot of highlighting on Kindle books, go and try this for 30 days. It's really cool. I don't think you don't, like I said, you don't even really read a lot of ebooks. So I expect this service wouldn't mean anything to you.
No, and like we've also talked about, the highlighting thing bugs the shit out of me.
The actual like putting your finger on the thing and then highlighting it with your finger and everything. You don't like doing that at all.
Nope.
Well, you especially don't like it when it's the...
when it tells me that 5,000 people have highlighted this.
Right. Yeah, I got you. And you don't like taking your own highlights on it either. It's not, no. Do you ever, if you were reading and I know you read mostly fiction, so, and I don't tend to highlight, it depends, you know, some, I notice with a lot of the Brandon Sanderson books and with the Mark Lawrence books, there are a lot of these great philosophical bits that are just sort of offhanded thrown out there. So I find myself highlighting their books quite a bit, but some authors, then I might highlight a turn of phrase that I just think is a really nice bit of writing that I want to remember. But for the most part, I don't tend to highlight fiction as much. And I know that tends to be most of it, but if you do, would you be an old school having a physical book with a highlighter kind of a person?
No.
Yeah.
It's okay. I don't write in books. I don't do that. I don't want to ruin that book. And to me, you're ruining that book.
I gotcha. Look, it's a totally valid point of view. And
yeah.
So
if you, less so now than a couple of years ago, when you come to my house, books are on display. Mm-hmm. And I bought these really nice bookshelves and installed them specifically to display books and my favorite books and my favorite authors. And I remember at the time when I set it up in the living room upstairs, that I was super excited and jazzed that these bookshelves that I had bought were wide enough that I could put all the hardcovers of Robert Jordan on a single shelf. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not easy. Right. That, you know, you're if you go down to Target or Walmart or someplace like that and you buy, you know, the $25 to $35 bookshelf, you're not going to be able to fit those books on one shelf. So, you know, I had gone to IKEA and bought a really nice set of shelves, and I was just impressed that those fit that way. So to me, you know, I like to display things. Unfortunately, right now, the way my life is going, those bookshelves are not, they're not the way I want them to be, because of other stuff, but that's a completely separate conversation. When you come downstairs now into the game room, I've set up those cheap bookshelves, you know, the cheap ones that you get at Target and Walmart. And I have graphic novels displayed on them and also some hardcovers and some different things. And, you know, and again, and I'm making an effort to display the books that I want to display, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So for me, you know, physical books, I feel, are a completely different experience. Ebooks and audiobooks, you know, audiobooks, the performance is a big thing for me. So I am one of the people that I listen to everything at normal speed.
Right.
And I know Jamie was on a few weeks back and talked about how, you know, he's gotten up to 1.5 or 2 or something like that. And so he can really burn through audiobooks. I don't want to do that. And I don't like that. I want to listen to the performance. That's a huge part of the book for me. So I listen to everything at normal speed, when it comes to an ebook, I enjoy ebooks because I can control the experience. You know, I can zoom in, zoom out. I can do whatever I want that makes it easier for me to read that book and kind of, you know, have a unique experience with it. You know, the physical book, a lot of times for me at this point is, I really enjoyed that book. I really want to support that author, and I want people to know. If I have the ebook or the audiobook, people don't know.
Right.
And you lose that word of mouth, right? Mm-hmm. So if I buy the physical book and I have the physical book on my shelf, and most of the time that means, you know, I'm trying to find a hardcover if I can. That's a great word of mouth thing. You know, I've had people come over to my house, especially for game nights and different things, and see a book on the shelf and say, oh, you know, is that a good book? Yes, it's a great book. You should get it. You should go get it right now. Go read it.
I think that's a really a good point, because at this point in my life, my living situation is still in flux, and I don't, even in the place that we were living in, we still hadn't really settled in there fully yet. So we didn't even have a bookshelf set up. So any books that I had were up in the attic in a box anyway. And I would like to, whenever we get settled in a more permanent place, get that going again. It is the thing that I am enjoying about Readwise. The problem when you do read ebooks and audiobooks for that matter is, now that I have a couple of years history of reading these books, well, if you have a book that you read 5 to 10 years ago now as an ebook, you don't have that serendipity of walking by your bookshelf and you're like, I remember this book. And you kind of have the memories of what was going on in your life when you were reading it. And if you are someone that maybe takes some notes or do some highlights, then you might thumb through it. And I was like, oh yeah, that's a good bit there. And that's why I started doing the note cards and things like that. But that's what I really like about this Readwise, is that it just randomly pull stuff and then sends it to you, or that you can go to the website. I like kind of going to the website. And so it's throwing me highlights of books that I read 8 years ago. And I'm like, oh yeah, that's a good thing to think of. And then hopefully with all of this, whatever kind of reading you're doing, maybe one of the, I know a lot of people read for escape, and that's a damn good reason to read. It's a damn good way to read, just to focus on one thing. And if that's what you get out of reading, cool. A lot of my reading these days is because I want to learn things and improve myself. What happens is that now when you're starting to reference these older books that you've read, or books that you've read a long time ago, now you start seeing connections, right? Between things that you've read recently and things that you read 7, 8 years ago. And it just helps with your understanding of whatever it is, whatever your subject matter is. And just even bits from fiction, you know, like I said, if it's a good turn of phrase, or if it's just a little life lesson that the author is kind of having a character talk about, or just to put out there, to me, this has just been such a good experience for me using this service, in terms of just like trying to, you know, combine these, you know, lessons from older books with newer books and seeing how they all play off each other. And it's been great. And I think if you have a good physical library of books, then you can kind of do that in a more tactile fashion. You know, just be like, hey, you know, I'm going to pull a couple books off my shelf and kind of take a look at them, and that's a nice way to do it too. And I don't know if you do that. I don't know if you take your books off the shelf and kind of thumb through them and think about what was going on in your life when you read it, or if it's more of, I like this object here.
It's difficult.
Yeah.
No, I don't take them down, but yes, every single book has a memory attached to it.
Sure.
You know, I keep these ragged, just ragged, broken spined paperbacks stacked up that are Star Trek novels.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep them because the memory of those is my mom bringing them home to me from the bar.
Right.
Because she was working at Luigi's at the time. This was in Fresno. She would tell the customers there about her son who loved to read and was a big Star Trek fan. And they were apparently Star Trek fans. And there was a couple of them that were reading these paperbacks. And whenever they would finish a paperback, they would give it to her and she would bring it home to me. Cool. And so I have easily a couple dozen of those. And then that also got me into spending my money and going to Walden Books in the mall. And I remember going all the way in the back. When you walked into Walden Books, you had to walk the entire length of the store to the very back wall next to the door that led to where the employees would go into the back, right? Where I'm assuming there was like a warehouse and shipping and offices and whoever knows what else was back there. But you had to go all the way back to that wall, and there was one bookshelf, and that's where all the Star Trek books were. And I would go through and look and say, you know, oh, well, someone brought me number 23. Now I need number 24.
Yeah.
And I would buy my own Star Trek books. So every book has a memory.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about that when I was looking through this bookstore yesterday, because they had a decent science fiction section, but it was all random stuff. And the newer things, you know, a lot of them were books that I either have or received or read. So they weren't that much of an interest to me. But they did have the, like, paperback section. And like you said, it was like these old ratty paperbacks that were probably from the 70s and 80s and what have you. And I was way more interested in those because I guess it just sort of reminded me of when I was younger. And I'd be like, oh, I wonder how good, if these are any good. Like, I was more interested in that. So I do think there is a, you know, a feeling that comes from physical books that is probably lost with your ebooks and audiobooks because you don't have those. You don't have those in your hand. It's a less, there's our memories and the way that we process things utilize all of our senses. And by not having that tactile sensation, by not having that olfactory sensation that comes from reading a physical book, we're probably not getting quite as much out of our ebooks and audiobooks because of that. So it's interesting. I don't know. So, but I am at the point where I do plan to go into that bookstore on a somewhat regular basis and just pick up a couple of books that look interesting, just because I've really gotten a lot out of doing it. It's funny because I used to take a lot of books out of the library, and I don't anymore because I like to mark them up, and you can't do that with a library book. And so that's kind of where I'm at with although I do take them out sometimes nowadays just to decide if it's a book that I would want. Because sometimes the description of the book may sound great, but when you actually open it up and get it in your hands and glance around it, you realize, like, I don't think this is really for me. So I still do use the library for that. I'll reserve books if I'm not sure if it's something I'd want to buy and thumb through it and read a little bit of it and decide if it's something that I want to commit to. Because, right, so much of a book, it's not the monetary cost, it's the time cost, right? I mean, what do you think about that in terms of how you choose to read your books? Because, you know, all right, if it's an audiobook, it's going to be 10 to 50 hours of my life that I'm going to put into this. That to me is a greater cost than the money in a lot of ways. What do you think?
What do you mean?
Well, meaning that if you decide to read a book, let's say it's by an author that you don't know. And do you want to take a chance on this book and devote 10 to, you know, upwards of 50 hours on a book, depending on how long it is, and then be disappointed in it in the end.
Is
that a concern for you at all?
Yeah. And there are times when, especially with audiobooks, there are times when I will specifically avoid the unknown, the unknown quantity, because I want to be entertained. I need to be entertained. I need to escape, as you know, the way you're talking. And so I will specifically seek out things that I know that I'm going to enjoy them. They're going to be good. And then there are other times, like right now, where I've just been pushing myself to explore new stuff.
Right.
And one of the things that I look at, especially with audiobooks, is the length of the audiobook. Mm-hmm. And so I burned through a lot of what I will consider short audiobooks back to back to back here recently in the last couple of weeks. And these were 9 and 10 hour audiobooks. So, you know, really kind of quick. And enjoyed them. And then I went for a book that I want to say is 25 hours long. Been on my to-be-read list for a really long time. Decided I wanted to give it a shot. And I remember, you know, listening to it. I'm still listening to it. I've been listening to it for like a week and a half now. Something like that. And I keep thinking to myself, How much longer mm-hmm. is this book? Mm-hmm. And I swear to you, every time I look at it, it still says 18 hours. and so it's kind of funny because I texted John DiNardo last night from SF Signal. And I was trying to get some songs stuck in his head. So I was sending him some very specific things. I asked him if he remembered the song Mambo Number 5. And then I said, "Hey John, what is love?" You know, stuff like that, because I'm trying to get these specific songs stuck in his head. It didn't work. It kind of backfired. But anyway, I mentioned to him this book, and he just laughed and said, "Yeah, let's not go there. Let's not talk about that book." So I think he had a similar experience just reading it, because he would have read it paperback, probably. Right. And it is an older book. And so There's not anything necessarily wrong with this book. It's well written. It has a lot of stuff going on, but it's not really engaging me. And I'm now about halfway through it. And unlike the other short books that I was reading before this, I don't look forward to the next time I have time to listen to the book.
Right.
So you know, I always have to make that decision. Do I continue on, or do I just try to find something else?
How good are you at bailing on a book?
I am actually 50-50.
Okay.
Like there was a book that made a splash and even got optioned. I think now they're going to make a TV show about it. And it's funny because I had a conversation with Gail Carriger about this when she was in town, and because she was asking me and other people, you know, what do we think about this book? And to me, it's a silly book. And I listened to it because I kept waiting for something to happen. And I stuck with it because I kept thinking, well, something's got to happen. Something has to happen. There's going to be some sort of big event in this book, something. And when I got to the end and nothing ever happened, I said, are you fucking kidding me? It's like this whole book got published and I felt like nothing ever happened. I stuck with it through the entire book and nothing ever happened. And I'm looking at it going, and this is going to be a TV show now?
It'll be like Seinfeld, you know, it'll be about nothing.
And I mean, the two main characters, there's no point for them to be together, to like each other, to spend time together. There's absolutely no reason for these two characters to come together in this book except that the author needed them to.
Yeah.
And I mean, and then keeps them together, even though there's no point in keeping them together. I mean, it was just a silly, silly book. But I stuck with it because I kept waiting for something to happen. I kept thinking, well, something's got to happen, right? I mean, this is a published book. Something's got to happen. No, it never happened. There was also a book that was narrated by Bronson Pinchot that was absolutely horrible. It was a terrible book, but I stuck with it because Bronson Pinchot did such a marvelous job narrating it. And even though it was a terrible book, he did such a great job that I was mesmerized by his voice. And I kept thinking, wow, I feel sorry for you, Bronson, that you had to narrate this book.
Yeah, I'm bad at bailing on books. I try to be as selective as possible beforehand, but once I get going, I generally finish it. Although I have stopped reading a couple of books in the past year. But I think
there have been a couple of, so when you listen to a book or you read a book on Amazon or Audible, you know, or buy a book, immediately you get the, well, since you bought that, other customers who bought that also bought these books. I almost always get screwed on those books. And so, you know, one of the things, I love The Expanse. I love James S.A. Corey's books. I really get into them. Trying to find anything at all like them is really, really difficult. People recommend stuff to me. Audible recommends stuff to me. Amazon recommends stuff to me. And every single time I try to read or listen to one of these recommended books, I go, were you smoking crack when you thought that this was like The Expanse? Is the algorithm just broken?
Yeah.
And so those books I do tend to bail on.
Yeah. I tend to think with reading that even if by the end it's not the best experience for you or you didn't feel like you got much out of it, I still think it's a positive to read any book because if nothing else, you are in somebody else's head for the time that you're reading it. And it helps you to, and then there's all those studies about how people who read are more empathetic and all these benefits to reading. So I think even if you read the trashiest, you know, stuff that you'd be embarrassed to admit you read, you know, some kind of, you know, paranormal, YA, whatever. Let's say you dig those books, but you're embarrassed to admit it. Look, even if that's the kind of book that you read, it's still written by someone that tried their damnedest to make a good book, and you're in their head and you have their thoughts and their values, and that is a positive thing to do. However, for me, there are so many books that I want to read, that I want to learn about these particular things, that I want to grow as a human being, that I probably own 50 to 100 ebooks that I'm dying to get to. I probably have another 200 books that are in my to buy pile on Amazon that I want to read. So just in what I currently have in the pipeline, there are probably 300 books. At best, I can read 100 books a year, and it's probably really more like 50. I don't want to waste my reading time, because there's so many that I want to get to. So I try to be more selective. I try to bail if I'm not digging something. But that's a trick, because I know a lot of these and like, here, how to read more and how to read better. That is the bit of advice that they give quite frequently, is the learn to bail on books, because you'll open yourself up to reading more books then. And I get it, and I try to do that, and I'm trying to get better at it. But then I can also point to you to many books that I wanted to bail on, and I stuck with it and I stuck with it, and then it got awesome. So I always have those in the back of my mind. But sometimes if it's just poor, poor writing, then it's easy to bail on them. But if it's just I try to bail because it's written poorly, or I just really do not care for the author's perspective. One of the nonfiction books that I read, the author just talked about themselves the whole time. It was like, I'm so great because I did this. And that was the first 50 pages of the book. And I'm like, this is not what I thought this book was. I don't need to hear you brag about your life. That's not.
Yeah, there was a book that I think it was a marketing book that I was listening to. So I have re-engaged with Goodreads.
Oh, that's
recently.
Cool.
Like I went through my Goodreads and I cleaned it up and I actually have been marking the books that I'm reading.
Cool.
And marking the when I've read them and all this kind of stuff. But I don't really put nonfiction in there.
Okay.
But I was reading, and I want to say it was a marketing book, and it was literally this person reading emails that they had gotten and then responding to the emails.
Okay.
It's like, oh, I'm having a problem with X, Y, and Z, and I'm trying to figure out how to market to blah, 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 blah. And the person would go, so, you know, this person sent me this email, and I replied by saying, dear such and such, blah, blah, blah. And I'm going, really? This is your book? And right. I bailed on that very fast.
Yeah. Yeah. So those kinds of things I've learned to be able to bail on them, and I'm trying to get better about doing that so that I can make more room, because like I said, it's an endless pile of books and we want to read the good stuff, but it is hard to make that decision sometime because, you know, the example I often use is a Wise Man's Fear, the second Rothfuss book. That's a hard book to get through the first couple hundred pages of. It's slow going. And then the last 500 pages is my favorite book. Maybe.
Well, I felt the same way about the first book.
Yeah. Yeah. Similar. Yeah.
It's very hard for me to get through the first, you know, 5,000 pages of that first book.
That's good. Yeah. He and George R. R. Martin, man, they're kindred spirits.
Yeah, I wish I could have got to chapter 2.
Yeah. But I couldn't get to the 6,000th page. Yeah. Well, anyway, well, that was a nice little reading discussion we had there. That was, mm-hmm. It was pretty nice. I like going through that kind of stuff with you. What do you got going on, Patrick? What do you want to leave our listeners with today? Any good creative things or fun stuff or social media things that you would like to let our listeners know about?
You know, it's funny that there's lots of different creative outlets. And as you and I talked about a little bit off air, one of my creative outlets for Thanksgiving was actually cooking.
Yeah.
Okay. Like so we went to my aunt and uncle's house for Thanksgiving. But then, you know how every family has their traditions. Every family has things that they like to do. My aunt has a certain way of doing things, and that's not the way my mom has always done things. So we go there for Thanksgiving, and then the day after, I actually cook everything the way mom always did. And we kind of have our Thanksgiving. So that's what I did. You know, I spent the day on the Friday after Thanksgiving cooking and also taking tons of pictures and posting them on social media.
Yeah.
And I continued that on Saturday. And I tried this egg frittata thing that I'd never tried before. And I made them as like cupcakes in a cupcake pan. So they were individual. Those were really good. And then as we're recording this tonight, I am going to do my turkey pot pie that I always do.
Nice.
So, you know, that's also a creative outlet. You know, it's not like a Beth Cato who is doing all these cookies and recipes and all that kind of stuff, but it's a little piece of it. And,
cool.
And that's one thing that I do that kind of gets creative stuff out there. I also decided I was going to do a not NaNoWriMo project and failed miserably. So that kind of has just, you know, exploded and burned.
Well, you got to try these things sometimes.
Yeah, it's okay.
Good. Cool. All right. Well, if you dig the show, consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. We appreciate those of you who are already backing us. And if not, consider becoming one of our backers. We do appreciate it.
Which reminds me, Stace, hi, I'm Patrick.
Yes. Yes.
I'm Patrick, Stace. That's my name, Patrick Hester.
Nice. All right, Stace.
So I'm going to tell that story real quick. I'm not going to let you hang up.
Okay.
I'm going to tell that story. So known Stace for a while, have seen him at different events. He's been a listener of the show, and he's now probably listening to this and just rolling his eyes and going, oh, God, no. But at Mile High Con, he had his girlfriend with him, and I walked up and said hello, and he's like, oh, hey. He goes, I've been wanting to introduce you guys. And he introduced his girlfriend, and then he turned to me, and he goes, and this is...
And you
and
are...
he completely blanked on my name. It was hilarious.
That's
hilarious.
Great.
And so now I've kind of social stalked him a little bit. And if he comments on my stuff, occasionally I'll say, you know, I'll reply to the comment and then reply to that comment and say, by the way, this is Patrick, Patrick Hester.
Nice. Nice.
Cool. Which I think is kind of funny.
Well, it's pretty funny. It's pretty funny. All right, everybody. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, Mo.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves. I hope we pass the audition.
Still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.